Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, Davy.
Davy.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. How about tomato, Plato?
Plato.
Here's got your Toradora.
Oh, Dora.
Try the bologna, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Welcome to Say Yes to the Chef. Our guest today is Jen Snyder. She's the founder of Grow Well. And I'm Chef Janice Escott. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, I'm Chef Kelly Taylor. How are you today?
We're all great today. Thank you.
How are you today, Jen?
Doing great. Thanks.
Welcome.
Thanks.
It's good to have you here, Jen. So, Grow Well. That's really interesting. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, so Grow Well is my private practice. I work as a psychotherapist and a coach, helping people make lifestyle changes in healthy ways. And I also really love to provide local community classes that integrate mindfulness with sustainable food. I have some background in sustainable farming, and so I'm working to combine a lot of these passions that I think are really helpful for people in making sustainable changes for themselves. So that's what I work on all the time.
Okay, great. So I noticed that you live on a farm. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, several years ago, I want to say maybe 8 years ago, we both had been working very hard. My partner and I were working very hard in our professions, and we're going through some changes and had a chance to make a change. And both of us right in that moment saw the sustainable farm community in our area and the richness of learning that we could engage with. And we thought, let's lean that way if we can. And so we did. We found a piece of land and we took classes at Central Carolina Community College and with the Breeze program out in Orange County. Mm-hmm. And we just really started to organize a change in living for ourselves and what we thought might be at that time a change in occupation for both of us. So we spent about 3 years farming our land.
And where is your land?
Yeah, it's out in Orange County. So we farmed vegetables and raised some chickens and had goats that we thought we might do something with for profit, but we just enjoy our goats.
They become pets, don't
they? They've always been friends. Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah.
And specifically, if you name them, and
it's true.
That's true, isn't it?
And we named all of our chickens as well. So it is a loving relationship with our animals. And as someone who has been also studying mindfulness, it's been really neat to get to know animals in these ways, and really neat to get to know plants in these ways, and also the way life can organize itself a little differently around a natural life, you know, some integration with the relatedness that we naturally feel with food, for example. Mm-hmm. So I've really loved that part of it. But as an occupation, we adopted a little boy out of the blue.
Out of the blue? Who adopts the little boy out of the blue?
He just dropped out. It was one of those, one day you're not a parent and the next day you are a parent. Oh, and it happened to be beautiful. In April when all of our crops were just about to go in for the summer rotation. Oh. And you know, we had a every 2 hour eater for about a year. And so we were kind of faced with a decision point, whether we really wanted to make the farm a business for us at that point or whether I wanted to pull aside and work on Grow Well. Mm. And so off I went into Grow Well, and we turned our farm into a little incubator farm. So we had a woman farm there for a little while on her own, and she grew flowers and raised vegetables, and then she moved on. And now we have 10 Mothers Farm is farming on our land now.
That's a great name.
And they are remarkable farmers. I really love watching them work. Yes.
Tell us about that. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, about having them on our land.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's just felt very serendipitous in many ways. You know, we just said we built the infrastructure, we have the greenhouse, we have the cooling space, we just don't have the farmers, what we got to. And the farm was very ready for folks, but having land is such a barrier for young farmers. And so we knew this, we had been around enough to know this. And so we just opened the door, and the right people have come through the door. And so Gordon and Vera, who are farming the land now, are deeply trained in organic farming methods and also in teaching cooking. Vera trained at with Alice Waters, I believe, at Edible Schoolyard.
In Berkeley.
And then yes. helped start the Edible Schoolyard program in Brooklyn, I think, is where it is. And
oh, because they have one here in Greensboro.
Do they? I think they do.
Yes, in North Carolina.
Amazing.
It's spreading around.
I know what you're talking about. Yes. Yeah. So she's a teacher, actually, with over at the Lantern Restaurant with the Kitchen Patrol.
After school program.
Yes. So we get to have these amazing, talented people working on our land, and we get to raise our child in this environment at this point. And it's really delightful and integrated in a way that I think we all miss a little bit, just that together and creating community. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it a CSA model, so community supported agriculture model of farming, which is inherently community building. Mm-hmm. And so we love being around that. And maybe that's always been the real gift for us of connecting with sustainable farming for ourselves, is to get to be in this community in such a deep way.
Would you explain briefly CSAs, please?
Yeah. So community-supported agriculture can be done in many ways, but it tends to be, in this area, a subscription that people pay on a you know, seasonal or a weekly or monthly basis, where they pay in advance. And so they invest with the farmers in the season of food. And so then they get a box delivered to them every week. And it is all the most, you know, vibrant, you know, crops right out of the field. And they also get some instructions on how to use the food from these really talented folks. And
the freshest food.
The freshest food.
Imagine.
And it's this delightful challenge every week, because you have to learn what to do with, like they're growing Molokia spinach, I believe is what it's called, and it's a Jewish traditional spinach food. If Vera and Gordon listen to this and I'm wrong about this, I'm so sorry. but it's interesting. Like, we get to learn about that food. We get to learn how to prepare it. We get to learn how to think about why certain foods don't grow in certain seasons in certain areas. And especially in our food culture right now, where we're in a grocery store and everything seems to be available all year round.
But it comes from faraway places.
It does indeed. And there are some costs in that. And so that's a way for us to continue to educate folks and help people connect with what is that food and where does it come from? Mm-hmm. And I have to say that mindfulness folds in so nicely to this. You know, I feel like I'm not farming and growing very much right now, but I sure do walk those gardens, and I sure do connect with what's happening and the vibrant relationship I have with that food that's going to become my body. You know, it's going to go into my body, and I'm going to eat it, and it's going to become my life energy. And, you know, I sound a little out there sometimes when I talk about that, but it's what's happening. And with so many of us struggling with what should I eat and how much and how do I control it better, I think that the connection we have with growing food is very rich territory for us to explore. So I love creating opportunities to get people out to these farms and to experience it for themselves and taste food off of the plant. And, you know, I can tell you really quickly with kids, they get that so fast.
They do get it very fast.
They do. They just pick it up and it's in and it's done. Mm-hmm. And the parent looks at us and says, that's the first time he's ever eaten lettuce, you know, and we say, of course he just ate that lettuce, you know, that makes sense. And it makes sense deeply for the child. So
I find it really interesting when we were both at the Central Carolina Community College, because we started the National Chef program down there.
Yeah, I love that program.
So we're very familiar with the sustainable farming down there.
Awesome.
It's such a great program. But we would take, like, as the teacher in the culinary program, we would take our students there, and often we would take little kids from other class would come in, and they were just the most adorable children. One little boy in particular, I'll tell you before we take a break, but he was one of those kids who wouldn't eat anything, according to his parents. He came on the farm and was eating everything, including the weeds, which I was like, are those edible? Like, I kept asking the farmer. I was alarmed. I was like, the mom might be a little upset that he's eating weeds. But he totally got it. And the weeds were edible.
Awesome.
But he just...
Many are.
Yes. But, you know, I didn't know that much about farming when I first started working there, which was years ago. So I didn't know. And I just wanted to make sure, you know, no one was going to be sick later on. But, yeah, he started eating the weeds. And then all the other kids started eating the weeds. And I think they enjoyed the weeds more than they enjoyed anything else that day. And we went back and we cooked and stuff. And I still think to this day it was the weeds. Oh. But we have to take a quick break. This is Say Yes to the Chef on 97.9 WCHL Chapelboro. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I am Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott. Our guest today is Jen Snyder, founder of Grow Well. Before we took a break, we were talking about sustainable farming and your background in that. And then you also are a psychotherapist. So now in Grow Well, you're kind of bringing together mindful eating and sustainability. And I'm curious about what that means exactly.
Of course.
Because
yeah.
Mindfulness in its own, I think we need to describe what you mean by mindfulness first and then how you bring them together.
Yeah. I get to talk about all the things I love to talk about here. So thanks for that. you know, mindfulness is something that a lot of people are hearing about these days. It's becoming just like sustainable farming, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be interested in very popular things. And so mindfulness is really, as I'm thinking about it here, about learning to pay attention, kind of stop the flow of busy life and learn how to stop the flow, first of all. That's something. And then pay attention to what's happening. Pay attention to what we're eating. Pay attention to the way we're eating. That's fascinating territory. How many of us have stopped to notice a bite of food recently? When I work with groups, I find that many of us don't have any stopping that happens in the process of eating. And then awareness is the other element of it, and really beginning to notice what impact does this food have on my body? What is it like to look at my food for a few moments before I eat it? What's it like to manifest a sense of connection with the farmer? To manifest a connection with, you know, the life that was in that food coming into the life that is my body. What's it like to just stop and become aware to those dynamic processes that are underway and really be a part of those processes? And then the third part that I'll add in, which I think is so relevant with people who have been making changes in and really struggling to make changes in how they eat, is self-compassion. And
that's a good one.
It is. And most people's faces relax a little bit when they hear me say that, because it feels like such an important something to bring up. So self-compassion in eating in particular really resonates for people. We have a very familiar critical voice in our minds about food all the time, and we have incredible influence on us all the time, from marketing to messages from our childhood about what to eat to, you know, messages from our culture about what bodies are supposed to look like. We are heavily influenced in this category of behavior, where we have to make choices many times a day, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a day. We have to decide yes or no to certain foods. And what I've experienced in myself, in my process, and also in working with people, is that there's a lot of pain that we've kind of stuffed down in us about how that goes. And there's not a lot of easy healing there. And so I think that mindful eating in particular and mindfulness-based approaches are starting to get into this territory of, you know, pulling some of that pain out and letting it go by, letting it float away, and then you know, building new connections with food, you know, new relationships with food. That's something you hear in mindful eating a lot, you know, building a relationship with food and eating in new ways. We very much need that.
What do you mean, though, when you say build a relationship? Because we're starting to sound a little kind of out there, you know, again. And I want to bring it back in, because sometimes people might be like, oh, that's that, you know, whatever over there, that little crazy thing going on.
It's very practical.
But what does that mean?
There are things that we can actually do.
Yes. There are things that we can actually do. Absolutely. So, it's a great question, and I think that's an important thing with most mindfulness practice, is it's not really out there. It's really just about tuning in to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of us can relate with some sense that we wake up in the morning and our life just kind of goes by. And there's a lot that's automated in our brains about how to get through this busy life. And so mindfulness is very much about finding ways to create pauses and moments where we can stop and say, is this is this how I mean for this to go? Is there something I need to attend to here? And so learning to take those pauses is a big piece of things. With the relationship part, it's then getting to know my experience of being alive a little bit more deeply when I do pause. And so if I'm able to stop with food, let's just take a practical example. Mm-hmm. So I've got my plate of food in front of me. Mm-hmm. My automatic brain, the fork's already in my hand. Digestion has already started. Half the meal's gone before I notice, right?
Right.
If I was extremely hungry, there's a good chance I'm going to eat much more of that food than I actually want or need. There's just an automatic process going on. Mm-hmm. But if I can learn to take a quick pause, stop the train if I can, and put that fork down for a second and just notice that food for a minute, I've begun a sense of relatedness with the experience I'm about to have with food. It might just last that little brief amount of time, but what comes in at that moment is a little bit of ability to choose. And so I might say, one bite, let me just take one bite and then stop. I might say, I'm going to put my fork down between each bite and just see if I can notice the experience of eating this food. I might say, this food is so beautiful. Let me just take that in for a second. And all of that is just connecting us with the experience we're about to have, where that self-compassion comes in, which is, you know, can feel like an out there term too. But I might notice in that moment of pause that I'm very stressed. I'm very sad. I'm very alone feeling. You know, a lot of us eat for reasons that are very emotionally driven. Mm-hmm. I might notice that and use that opportunity to lend a friendly hand to myself and say, is this what you need? You know, how can I take care of myself in this moment? And so we're really looking at mindfulness. It is a very practical tool. It's very much about learning how to stop, cueing ourselves to stop. And then when we stop, what do we do with that little bit of space that can be so filled with a rush back to the automatic, right?
Or a rush to the negative,
Because
we are critical about what we're eating, how we look, how we feel. Is this not what we're supposed to be eating? We know we're not supposed to be eating it, but here we are shoving it in our face. You know, there's like a whole litany of things going on in your mind, and you're like, oh God. And so that might be why people don't want to stop, right? I don't want to stop and listen to me, you know, complain about all this stuff that I'm not happy about, right? I think part of it, when you slow down and you do stop, then you kind of have to confront some of those things that you don't want to confront.
That's right.
Which is why you're shoveling it in and not paying attention.
Right.
So
right.
Then what? I guess that's where the psychotherapist in you comes out.
there is a role of psychotherapy in this, and that is an, I love therapy. I think it's a really great thing to have for any of you who don't have therapists. Go get one.
Or Jen.
But it's about really connecting with our experience and doing it in a way that is ever more safe, a little bit more safe, and we can go a little deeper with support. But we can do that with the support of a friend sometimes, too. I've been working with Grow Well to create ways we can support each other in online community, just to say, hey, we're in this together. This is a little bit hard. You know, what are you noticing? Mm-hmm. How can we kind of help each other along with these things? But to go back to that kind of, can I tolerate a moment of noticing?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah,
yes.
Can I handle that? Mm-hmm. It's just, one of the wonderful teachings of mindfulness is a curious mind or a beginner's mind. And I love that because it is about saying, okay, wow, I noticed a lot of stuff there. I'm interested in that now. And you don't have to fix it. You don't have to, you know, solve all the problems. You might just learn how to say, wow, a lot of feeling is in there. There's some pain in there. Oh, okay. You know, I want to get interested in that. And so I'm going to set that aside for now. I'm going to eat my food. You know, I might eat it a little bit more consciously in this meal. Knowing the automatic's going to come back, that's fine. That happens. We're actually built that way. That's our human experience. But I have an opportunity to bring curiosity to my life. And I actually find the more I practice mindfulness, the lighter I get about those things. Mm-hmm. When I notice, like, wow, you're stressed. Oh, my gosh. How much are you going to shovel in your mouth right now? It's okay. Or I might catch up with that moment after it's already happened. And then what an opportunity for self-compassion to arise and say, oh, sweetie, that was a hard moment. You know, you got through that one. Now let's take a moment and see if there's anything you want to notice about that. You know?
All right. We have to take a quick break. This is Say Yes to the Chef. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I am Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott and our guest Jen Snyder of Grow Well. Before we took a break, we were talking about really self-compassionate eating, which is one step of mindfulness, which you talked about. There are three sort of categories.
Yes.
Learning how to stop and pay attention to what we're eating, being aware of what this does, the impact in our body and our environment, that kind of thing, and then self-compassion. And self-compassion, I agree, it kind of should start there a lot of times.
Yes.
The break is nice, but I was thinking of something that I had heard a long time ago, and I wondered what your opinion was. Someone had told me once that when people are craving sweets, mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of reasons why people crave sweets. Yes. There's some, you know, biological reasons. But someone said, maybe you're just craving something sweet in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the idea that you just don't, you're right, you just need something sweet. Like, there's something else happening.
Yes.
And that sweetness of the cookie or whatever it is brings that that part that you need that you're not getting somewhere else. I wondered what you thought about that. Even in your description before we left, when you were talking about being compassionate to someone who is being rough on themselves because they're eating something they don't think they should be eating, you called them sweetie. And I often hear these words and I'm always thinking, it's so interesting how we talk to people and how we talk about sweet and that type of food, which is often also the bad guy, right? In food, we're not supposed to eat cookies and cakes, and right, that's the bad thing. So it's interesting to me. I wonder what your take is on just sort of that type of food in particular, and the way we use it in our vocabulary, and how we seek it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's so much in that question. you know, first one of the real core teachings with mindful eating is really helping people get away from that good and bad thinking about food. We've got so many rules. Oh, my gosh. We're following so many rules about food. And it really is an access point for self-compassion to say, wow, it's been hard to try to keep up with all this. Mm-hmm. Is this good? Mm-hmm. Is this bad? Should I have this? Should
Sometimes
I not have this?
Sometimes we don't even know.
Yeah. Exactly. We're really hard on ourselves about that. And I think the number of those messages has just gone up and up and up.
Yes.
And so it's all kind of life or death as it's presented. You know, 10 toxic foods that are going to get you, you know, and all this kind of thing. It's like, really? Is that how we want to be internalizing these messages about what food is? What you're speaking to is, you know, really on point. It, you know, there is something we're seeking from a sweet sometimes, you know, and we've lived in a way in relationship with food where sometimes we believe that cookie's the only thing that can satisfy that. And we live in a culture that really encourages that, you know, lots of messages that after you break up with someone, you should have a lot of ice
gallon
cream,
of ice
right?
cream. Yeah.
We all know that. Yeah. That's the message.
Or a big chunk of chocolate or something.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you have permission in those cases, but any other time you have no permission to eat that ice cream. And what a hard contradiction to live in. But certainly in mindful eating programs, we really do work to kind of expand that idea of what's comforting. What is that gift I can give myself? And if food is the only answer that we come to, let's see if we can kind of round that out a little bit and build that list a bit. And that's very helpful to us. And, you know, I think in those moments when we've got perspective and we're looking deeper at what we need and how to take care of ourselves, which we're, again, not in the habit of prioritizing, how do we say, actually, that walk outside, really being in nature, that little bit of time with my child, that yes, watch a television show. You know, it doesn't have to be all this purist stuff. It's like, just really, is there something else, too, that could give me that sense of, I'm okay. It's going to be okay. There is a dynamic and fast relationship between sugar and sweet and the reward centers of our brain.
Yes.
And so much of our food is engineered to light that up.
And salt.
And so there is a conversation about whether foods are addictive. You know, there is a conversation like that going on. Mm-hmm. And so what I always, when I'm teaching about self-compassion, I want us to all be really tender with ourselves about this new way of thinking about this. Because, you know, it is really, really rewarding to eat a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
It just
mm-hmm.
really is. Mm-hmm. And biologically, it's so,
yes.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not super easy to feel that great about a bath, you know? It's not. You know? So that's part of the training in it, is to say, mm-hmm. could I open myself a little bit to this other possibility? Could I create enough pause and connection with that new activity that I can notice it satisfying in other ways?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we're not pinging for this high level of satisfaction and this heightened experience of pleasure. Maybe we're learning to embrace a different kind of pleasure. And that's not a quick fix. That's something we ease into. And so we take our time with this. And Americans don't love taking their time, you know? So anyway, I'm often making hard sells, right? You know?
Yes, that is not something people like to do, is take their time. But it is an interesting idea. But there are a lot of things people can come up with. I mean, people like a lot of things. And a lot of them are things that people might not get to do on a regular basis. Like, you know, I remember for the longest time, I just didn't have time to read some magazines that I really enjoyed that were not cerebral, that were not, you know, I just wanted to read this goofy magazine and I wanted to enjoy it and I never had time. So, you know, just something as simple as like, I'll just read some from a magazine and give myself permission to do this, just like I could give myself permission to eat a cookie or whatever it is that is that I can do at that time.
Yes.
I think
that
permission is a good word for what you're talking about here,
mm-hmm.
because we're overly critical.
We are. We're hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah. And it's funny that we have to use that language for ourselves in many stages of this to say, I'm going to let myself have this experience, even if it's the cookie.
Yes,
I'm going to let myself
true.
Have the cookie. That's great. Enjoy the cookie.
Yeah, you know? Enjoy it while you're eating it. You know, I mean, they feel bad because you're eating it, but that's what you're eating. So, yeah, it is terrible. I mean, I always think about with people, because I taught a little bit about this, too, when we were teaching culinary school, which was way out there, you know, to be teaching mindful eating while you're teaching culinary school. But, you know, I always thought about, if you had to talk to someone else, would you talk to them the way that you're talking to yourself right now? If it was your best friend sitting there and she's like having a hard day or whatever, you'd be like, it's okay, just eat the cookie. It's okay. It's one cookie, you know, you don't, or whatever. You would give her permission, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you would not give yourself that same permission.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's an interesting thing that we do all in our head. We're so in our head.
We are. Yes.
Which is part of what we were talking about, is getting out of your head somewhat.
Yeah.
And paying attention when you talked about being on the farm.
Yeah.
Paying attention to what is around you.
Yeah.
And eating getting little bites of things as you're walking through the
Well,
garden.
I mean, just being connected to noticing what is around you.
A great connection.
It is.
And
it
you
is.
Were talking about distraction.
Yes.
Which is also about that. You can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
When you were talking, I was thinking about how distracted we are when we, or some people are when they eat, because there's lots of distractions. There's the phone, there's the television.
Yeah.
And so many people eat while they're doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they finish eating and can't remember what they've eaten.
Yeah.
And then they're still hungry.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, I'm going to agree with that. That is something that happens a lot for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to mention this little, it's from a Thich Nhat Hanh book, a little Buddhist teaching, I think, on this. And it was a Buddhist monk who was teaching his students, when you eat, eat, you know, and when you read, read. And then the students went out into the hall afterwards and they saw the monk eating and reading at the same time. And they said, oh, you know, we've got you, you know, you do it too. And he said, when you eat and read, eat and read. You know, and this is at the beginning of Thich Nhat Hanh's book, Savor.
It sounds like.
Yes.
It's That's very, hilarious.
It's very sweet, but it's another.
Of course.
Again, like, view that with self-compassion. We do multitask for many reasons in our culture that are not all bad reasons. But when we have the opportunity to take time to just be with the food.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take that time.
It's self-compassion again.
Yeah, it is self-compassion. And you know, it's everywhere. Yeah.
Loving ourselves.
We have endless opportunities to practice self-compassion in our culture. so many.
You don't hear that often. They have endless opportunities to practice something passionate. That is not what you hear these days at all. On the news, that's not what's happening.
I will happily be the messenger.
Yes, you will be the messenger. Okay, well, on that good note, we will be right back in just a little bit. This is Say Yes to the Chef on WCHL Chapelboro 97.9. Don't go anywhere. This is Say Yes to the Chef. This is Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott and our guest Jen Snyder, founder of Grow Well. We have been talking a little bit about mindfulness, self-compassion in particular, about eating and not being so hard on yourself when we're eating. And I wanted to kind of segue into how it is that you help people do these things, because that is what your strength is. How do you help people bring together mindful eating, take some space in their life, connect with everything around them? How do you do that, Jen?
Yes. Well, I do that in a few ways. One is I work with individuals, and I'm kind of branching into working with families as well. So I work as a psychotherapist, and then I also am doing coaching, helping people make these kinds of changes in a self-compassionate way, in a way that's focusing on connection. And so I do that with individuals and families both, and that's really interesting work.
How is psychotherapy practice different than coaching?
Yeah, so... it's a good question, and a lot of people have that question. Psychotherapy, for me, they're both very relationship-based services, and I think of coaching as being more in the action. You know, we're kind of setting goals, and we're kind of out there kind of trying to make changes actively. Psychotherapy is a relationship in which we can deepen in any number of ways, and it's just kind of a whole different experience for people, I think, to be in a psychotherapeutic relationship over a period of time. So coaching is like, let's get on the court, let's get out there, let's play with these things and learn how to be more agile with the changes we're trying to make.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the psychotherapy part is more like more awareness and understanding what's happening or trying to understand what's happening. And then the coaching part is taking what you've understood and figuring out for yourself perhaps a little bit and then doing something about it.
Yeah. There's a deeper relationship possible in psychotherapy, and there's a lot more process in that relationship. Mm-hmm. We're more on the court. We all kind of know how to go out there and set some goals and see how to work with them. Coaching tends to look a little bit more like that.
Okay.
So, and there's a lot of support in that. And then we've got a website. We've built a website that's full of some little bits.
What's the website?
Yeah, the website, I'm sorry, is growwellnc.com. Mm-hmm. You can also get there at growwell, two words, .me. And,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, yes. growwell.me. It's faster.
I like that.
It mostly works. It works 99% of the time. Okay. I don't understand websites that well.
I think you do, because your website is certainly a wonderful
website. It's a beautiful website.
It is.
We had some help from Brasco and Raleigh to design that website, and it's been a joy to put a lot of resources on there. We've got some little meditations you can follow along with, some breathing exercises, loving-kindness, yoga.
Good yoga.
Yoga for everybody. And we really have been focused on, you don't have to be a certain kind of person to have this work in your life. Mm-hmm. And so we've tried to create resources that feel very accessible. We've got some recipes on there and some articles I write, some about these topics, because I think there are so many layers and it helps us kind of ease into... what does this mean? Mm-hmm. And so you can find some articles like that on the website. So I love that. And then I have two programs. The Peaceful Plate is a 4-part program that really digs into this mindful eating and bringing in some practical skills with it. Mindfulness, as we've discussed, is already quite a practical skill to build. And then I like to bring in some of these practical skills of eating and planning to eat and deciding what to eat. What do we do about all these feelings about eating? So it's a 4-part series. We're starting that up in September. I think this is airing right before this starts. So if you're hearing this and you're interested, check it out right now. So September 13th, we're starting a couple programs in the Chapel Hill and Carrboro areas.
And they can find that on your website.
That's on the website. So, and I like doing those in groups where we're kind of live and we have this support of a group of people where we can kind of hear each other's process a little bit. But there's a lot to practice with this, as you can imagine. And we just ease into it little at a time and get ourselves a little running start with a four-part series and then run off into our lives.
And you also have a food and garden workshop that you're talking about.
So these are like my passion projects.
I know, they sound fun.
Yeah, so Grow Well used to be at the farm. I used to have my office there, and all of the coaching and counseling and classes happened at the farm. And I've since moved into town just to kind of go get to the people where they are. So I love bringing people to the farm, though. And there's something I can talk to you in this room about the magic of the garden and how nature really supports us with these practices. It's totally different to be out there on the farm. So the food and garden workshop I do in partnership. I love working in collaboration with people. So I work with Vera Fabian of Ten Mothers Farm, who I've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. She's our cooking teacher, and she's brilliant. And y'all should come see Vera teach. And Jane Sayers and Darren Knapp of Ramble Real Farm host that event. And Jane teaches. She's a horticultural therapist as well.
Huh.
She's amazing. Their farm is beautiful. And so we do a tour of the farm. Jane teaches us what's growing, and we do a little harvest together. And then we go inside, and Vera teaches us like these really practical, simple, and amazingly delicious ways to eat the food that's growing in that garden. And then we do mindful eating at the end. And then we just really prioritize having time to sit and talk as a community at the end, because that's what we get with eating together, right? You know, it's just a beautiful process of community. And I know that as a therapist and as a farmer and as a coach, all of those things, I know that having that community of support around us when we're making changes is one of the most vital factors. And so we're always looking at how can we deepen and make this community experience more rich for people. So I love those programs. And we've also done a mindful farm supper once, where we just did mindful eating for the whole supper and used all local ingredients from farms within about 5 miles of us. And it was just brilliant and wonderful.
That's a very different dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
We have forgotten that joy of hanging around the table.
We have.
Of just being at the table.
Yeah.
And just eating at leisure and talking and sharing and the laughter and the things that happen around a table.
It doesn't happen as much. I do meet families who are trying to put it back in. And at our Mindful Farm Supper, which the weather hasn't always cooperated with our farm events, and so it was in May, and it was about 50 degrees. We were outside for the whole thing, and people were such amazing sports about it. And but at the end of that, one of our mindful exercises was to sort of evoke a memory from childhood of mealtime.
Mm.
And we were around the table, and we shared our memories, and it was so touching and so beautiful, and not like how we eat now. And we all noticed that, and we didn't have to process it or do anything, but we just were touched by the experience of it. And that's what mindfulness gives me, is that touch of experience that moves me into making different choices just because I remembered something deeply. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, right.
Yes.
This is the food I'm meant to be eating. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. I remember the family dinner. Just as you said, the joy of it.
The joy.
Yeah. And the joy of eating without judgment.
Oh, yes.
Oh, can we just really, like, shout out? Just eating, just enjoying the bites and realizing the incredible nature of our bodies to make the most of whatever we put into our bodies towards health.
And very quickly, I wanted to bring up the word kind.
Yeah, thanks.
Because you resonate with that. And tell us why.
Well, I love, so self-compassion is a big piece of things. But kindness, yes. So we had the July Kindness Month. We've done that a couple of years now. So 31 days of kindness in July, which summertime is a crazy time to ask people to do things.
It is.
Everyone's energy is scattered to the winds. And I said, hey, 3 days before July started, I said, hey, let's have a kindness challenge. And an amazing number of people said, yes, let me do that with you. And so we had a Facebook group, and every day we practiced kindness together and shared it. We said, I did this today. I saw this today. Someone did this for me today. And it was beautiful. And we should have 365 days of kindness.
Practice, isn't that remarkable that we have to practice that now?
That it doesn't come just automatically, but I think that it will.
It will. Yeah. It will. I love your button, by the way.
I have a button that says, Make America Kind Again.
I love it.
And we are in the process of doing that. Thank you so much, Jen. This is, went by very quickly.
It went by quick. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Please like us on our Facebook page, Yes to the Chef. And for more information and to listen to previous podcasts of this program, be sure to visit our website, www.yestothechef.com. We're co-host Kelly Taylor, natural chef and instructor, and I'm Janice Escott, Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. Good, happy cooking, Kelly.
Happy cooking, Janice. Happy cooking,
Janice. Happy cooking. Thanks.
Oh, Tommy. Here with the gravy, David. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Have a tomato, Plato. Here's got your Toradora.
Oh, Dora.
Try the bologna, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I'll fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food will fill you. Stay in the kitchen alone, work my fingers to the